This morning we're going to think about a very important dimension of life and how it fits into a wise life, and that is the use of our tongues. And of course it extends not just to literal speech, but also all the other means by which we communicate, not least when we communicate on a keyboard. Goodness, the temptation into all sorts, saying all sorts of things via the means of a keyboard that we would never say to somebody face to face. Who hasn't felt that temptation before now? We're going to be thinking about speech, and speech is a major theme of the Holy Scriptures. I mean, a major theme. I mean, you'd find teaching on it on almost every page. It's a major theme of wisdom. I think it's fair to say that in sort of portraying the life of the wise person in the book of Proverbs, it would at least be true to say one major characteristic of the wise person is that they speak wisely. They speak wisely. In my little book of prayers, whenever I sort of think of a prayer or come across one that I like, I write it down in there. I've got a little prayer that's taken really from this verse. And it's a simple prayer. It's, Lord, may my tongue be a fountain of life. So that when I speak, others are refreshed and encouraged. It's a really strong metaphor. Imagine what is coming out of your mouth as a refreshing stream of water for other people. That's the prayer. That there would be, you know, good things that build people up and strengthen them, encourage them, correct them, give them good, healthy instruction coming out of my mouth. The tongue is very powerful. You know that because you can probably think of times that you have been cut to the quick by what people have said. And you can probably, and possibly words that have been spoken into your, you know, you've heard them and received them, and they've hurt you very deeply, and it's been hard to shake them off. And similarly, maybe you've heard things that have been a profound encouragement to you and that you hold on to. Elsewhere in Proverbs, it says this. Could I have the slide, the presentation now, please? The tongue, quite simply, has the power of life and death. You can speak life into people and you can speak death into people. Now, there are sort of marginal Christian theologies about this that start teaching about the tongue as though it's magic, as though you can actually kind of speak things into existence. I don't think that's what Proverbs is talking about here. It just means that when you speak, you can speak the truth in love, in which case you'll be building people up and helping them in their Christian journey and helping them to find life, or you can speak in a different way that hinders them growing towards Jesus, hinders them in finding and living life in all its fullness. Make no mistake, the tongue is very powerful. James, in his letter, reflects on the power of the tongue, and he says the tongue is like the rudder on a ship. A rudder is comparatively very small compared to the ship, but it is the rudder that steers where the ship is going. It controls the whole ship in the same way. The tongue is small, but it's very powerful. And he has another illustration of this. He says, the tongue is like the bit in a horse's mouth. It is comparatively very small compared to the strength of the horse. But because of the way it's strategically positioned, it can steer the horse and force the horse to obey it. In the same way, the tongue is very small, but it has tremendous power. Now just visualize with me for a moment your mouth and imagine that you go through life and out of your mouth just comes metaphorically refreshing water to all those you meet. I think you'd like that, wouldn't you? And who doesn't want that? Or alternatively, imagine that your mouth just produces unkindness, criticism, untruth, deceit, and you're just going around spreading pollution wherever you go. Both of these options are possible. There's another prayer in my little book. It comes from the Psalms. It says this: may all who fear you, that is, fear the Lord, find in me a cause for joy. So I pray, dear God, may all who fear you find in me a cause for joy. It seems to me that's one of important roles for a pastor, but it's true for all of us. That's a good prayer. And a good part of me being the means of joy in other people's lives will be the way I use my tongue. And so our aspiration is to use our tongues to bring life. Now, what's going on when we speak? Next slide, please. This rather crude diagram is meant to illustrate Jesus' words, which themselves are rooted in wisdom perspectives. Jesus, you'll remember, said that the speech that comes out of your mouth is really a production of what's inside of you, what's inside your heart. He says, out of his treasury of good things, a wise person brings forth good speech. And the converse is also true. Years ago, I keep tropical fish. I've done it for years. I would like to be more sort of, I have to say, you know, it's a sort of part-time hobby for me, and I could do better at it. But like everyone who's ever kept fish, sadly, you have the occasional casualty. And I remember going and asking for advice, and somebody said something in a fish shop, obviously a very experienced fish keeper, gave me this advice. He said, remember, you're not really keeping fish, you're keeping water. If the water is good, the fish will live. If the water is bad, the fish won't. The primary thing is to make sure the water is good. The same is true of our speech. If you recognize that, like me, your speech is not perfect, and James does say that if you can completely control your speech, you are a perfect person. And given that I don't believe any of us in this room are perfect, then it will be true, at least to some extent, that our tongues are not what they could be. If we're trying to speak better, the primary thing we should be concerned about is the state of our heart. Because essentially what Jesus is teaching is that what comes out of your mouth is really just a reflection of what's going on inside of you. And if you tend what's going on inside of you, that will automatically lead to you speaking more healthily. Equally, it's true that if what's going on inside, if inside you are full of bitterness and anger and unforgiveness and your commitment to the truth is not there, you've got prejudices, unexamined dislikes of others for no good reason. If all that is going on in there, then it will come out of your mouth. And so Jesus is saying the first thing that needs to be attended to is your heart. And this reflects Proverbs. Above all, guard your heart. In our culture, there's a lot of attempts to regulate how people speak because of the recognition that so often we can do tremendous damage with how we speak. And that's perfectly good in principle. And very often, we use education to try and help people to understand the power of their words and how they could speak better. But the truth is, unless there's a change of heart in a person, you can teach them all you like. It won't really change anything. At best, you might cow them into not saying certain things that are unhelpful. But the best outcome is if you can change someone's heart. Jesus says, what comes out of our mouths is a reflection of our heart. Now, perhaps you recognize that your heart is not perfect. And occasionally, when I've taught from wisdom stuff about foolishness and wisdom, someone has come to me looking a bit stricken and said, I think I'm a fool. Well, if that's you, that's quite good, really, because the first mark of a fool is that they don't know they are. They think they're clever. A fool, as Proverbs says, is wise in their own eyes. Humility is a really good starting point for becoming wise. But if you recognize that not everything that comes out of your mouth is good, then the first challenge I give you today is to look at your heart. And if, like me at times, you recognize there's stuff in there which is not very good, we're going to come to the communion table, which is a great place to ask Jesus to come and make your heart good again. All right, next slide, please. First practical principle that we get in wisdom teaching is that you shouldn't speak too much. The fool, we're told, gushes forth folly, but the wise person is restrained in their speech. Now, there's a number of things that makes me think. So just as your tongue could be a fountain of life, it's also possible to gush forth folly. And you'll have to be the judge of how you're doing, what mixture of stuff is coming out of your mouth, and I have to be the judge of mine. The other thing I just want to, I think it's right at this point for me to confess that by nature I am a talker. That is not a surprise to some of you. And I remember when I was doing a Saturday job working in Timpson's shoe shop, for those of you who remember when Timpson's were a going concern. And the manager of that shop, when I was 16, he said, words to the effect, this is my vague memory, James, you're a good worker and you'll probably do quite well in life. He said, but just remember, you've got two ears and one mouth, use them in proportion. And I have to be honest that is a challenge for me. My brain works overtime. I've got all sorts of things going through there, and I'm under the mistaken impression that you'd like to hear them all. So if you don't want to hear them, by all means rebuke me. I need to learn. But the general principle taught in Proverbs is that the fool, firstly, it's probably best understood as hot speech. There's stuff going on inside and just out it all comes. And particularly if it's emotionally charged, you get that as well. And there's no ability to pause between what's in here and what comes out of there. The wise person, however, is judicious with their speech. Before they speak, they consider the impact of their words. They don't see words just as a means of expressing how they feel in the first instance, but they're thinking about what is actually helpful to say in a given situation. And it's because of that principle that the wise person speaks less and thinks more. Now, 101 for fools. Even a fool can appear wise if they keep their mouth shut. That's a proverb. Okay, so the emergency teaching, for those of you who recognize that, like me, you have a tendency to, you know, gush forth folly, even a fool can appear wise if they just keep their mouth shut. So if you're not sure what to say in a situation, you don't have to say anything. And the wise learn how to speak helpfully into every situation. All right. Next slide, please. And this is about how we should speak rather than the content of what we speak. So I've got one thing to say about how we should speak, and I've got two things to say about what the content of our speech should be. All right. Just a few minutes on each. Firstly, how we should speak. And Proverbs, again and again, extols gentleness in speech. So firstly, in the midst of a quarrel, and Proverbs is not hot on quarrels, you know, where both sides are just emotionally charged and just going for it, chucking verbal bombs into the situation. Nothing much comes from that. There's more heat than light. And it says if you find yourself in the middle of such a situation, gentleness is the answer. A gentle answer turns away wrath. And this is about the tone in which we speak. It doesn't mean a weak answer. It doesn't mean weakness. It just means gentleness. Gentleness is strength under control, trying to extract the heat from a situation and speak calmly and truthfully into it. In fact, patient, gentle speech, I think, is more persuasive than forceful rhetoric. There's a place for forceful rhetoric, but generally speaking, the rule of thumb is gentle, firm speech. Speaking the truth gently in love. This proverb I really like. Patience can persuade a prince, and soft speech can break bones. It's not saying that it's a good idea to break people's bones. What it's saying is that actually, if you speak softly and persuasively, over time, your words can have a very big impact. If you speak harshly and aggressively, other people may not contradict you, but you'll be a fool if you think you've won the argument. You will not have changed someone's heart like that. And really, that's the last resort to have to speak like that. You know how, if you're a parent, I can just about remember my kids were toddlers, and at times, they did have the capacity to drive me crazy. They would go on and on asking for things, and eventually, you'd kind of lose. We've all seen someone in the supermarket, a poor parent, who've lost their rag with their kids, and they're shouting. And we all know that that's not the best place for a parent to be. But, you know, kids do have the capacity to kind of test our patience, don't they? But you're not really likely to win a child over. That's really the last resort. Much better to talk gently and firmly and persuasively and keep going patiently. This is the way to be persuasive. So how should we speak? With gentle firmness. And now, the content of what we should speak. Firstly, and obviously, we should speak the truth and not lies. Come this evening for that point to be developed. Secondly, next slide, please. When it says the tongue of the righteous is a fountain of life, one of the key components of that is the ability to instruct and correct. To instruct and correct. Again and again, Proverbs reflects upon the capacity of the wise person to speak a word of instruction or a word of correction into the lives of others. Now, this is pretty countercultural. In our culture, mostly we're told just to butt out. And occasionally within the church, you'll hear somebody say, oh, we're not supposed to judge others. Jesus told us not to judge others. Well, it's true he did in one sense. But actually, in terms of bringing correction to one another and instruction to one another, the Bible is crystal clear, the New Testament. We should admonish one another in love, according to Colossians. We should speak the truth in love so that we all grow up to maturity in Ephesians. And Jesus actually didn't say, never judge one another. What he said is, make a right judgment. His classic sort of parable or illustration was of the person who's got a great big plank in their eye trying to pull a speck out of someone else's. What Jesus didn't say is because there's a plank in your eye, you shouldn't try and take the speck out of other people's eyes. That's often how it's interpreted, but that is not what Jesus said. What Jesus said is, firstly, get the plank out of your eye so that you can see clearly to remove the specks from other people's eyes. The righteous tongue gently but firmly brings instruction and correction to others. So it's not just that Jesus wants you to walk closer to him and there is room for others to rebuke you in a godly way and correct you and instruct you. That's all true. You do need that. So you need to create relationships in your life where people can speak like that into your life. People you trust who are godly and mature. But here's the really challenging thing. You're meant to be doing it in a godly and humble way in the lives of others. That's what it means when it says in Hebrews, let us spur one another on towards love and good deeds. The metaphor is of a spur. What is a spur? It's that thing that horse riders used to wear on the inside of their on the inside of their boots, and they would kick the horse with it. It would goad the horse and spring the horse into action. I'm not in favour of that kind of behaviour to horses, just to be clear, but that's where the word comes from. We're supposed to spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Now, I ask you a question. Are you prepared to correct others? Or does the risk of them not liking you mean you'll never do it? I'll leave that question hanging for you to reflect on. Are you prepared to instruct others? Do you know enough about the way of Christ to do it? Jesus said, "Be my disciples." But he said more than that. He said, "If you are my disciples, you have a role to make other disciples." And part of that is through the use of your tongue. Of course, you can't do that if you've got no commitment to being a disciple yourself. That would make you a hypocrite. So all of this is deeply challenging. But I want my tongue to be a fountain of life. And so I've got to get started on all of this. I want to help others. I want to give them guidance. I want to live an example in front of them that they can follow. I can't do all of this perfectly. I need God again and again and again to restore me and restore my heart. But this is what I'm called to. And this is what the church is meant to be, an environment where we, admonishing one another in love, lead everyone towards Christian maturity. This is part of having a mouth that is a fountain of life. Next slide, please. And then the converse of that, and perhaps a bit more happily, is to encourage others. Now, interestingly, there isn't anything in Proverbs that says we should encourage other people. So it's not a big theme in Proverbs, but it is a big theme in the Scriptures of being an encouragement. So what is encouragement? And how does it differ from something that is not so nice? Flattery. Well, the big difference is the truth. Encouragement picks up on good qualities in a person or something healthy that they have done, and it affirms it and affirms it and affirms it. With kids, as part of upbringing, we would call it positive reinforcement. We see them doing something good and we say, "That was good, keep doing that." It's the opposite of correction and instruction when you're actually saying, "That was bad, we need to cut that out." Encouragement is, "That is good, well done." We all need encouragement. There is a danger that's alluded to in the Bible of getting weary in well-doing. We become weary of doing good. And the answer to that is we need people around us to encourage us. A little while ago, I was speaking to somebody who told me I'd done one of my normal preaches encouraging people to be part of a Christian community. And this person said to me, "Well, I hear that, James, and I think it's true for a lot of people. It's just not true for me. I don't need it." And we talked about it for a bit. And in the end, what I tried to say was, "Yeah, but in the end, it's you're not just going because you're getting something out of it. God might have something that he wants to use you to say to someone else in the congregation. And if you're not there, you can't, can you?" Now, I do appreciate, if you're online and hearing this, this is not having a pop at you. There's all sorts of reasons why you might have to be at home today. But if it's at all possible, it's good to be physically present with other Christians when you're worshiping, so that God can use your mouth to encourage and bring instruction. I like that image for encouragement, because I know if somebody encourages me, it kind of makes me feel like that. Flattery, on the other hand, is not a good thing at all. Flattery is when you tell somebody something was good when it wasn't, or it was meaningless and unimportant, and you're encouraging them to build their sense of worth around something that's useless and valueless. It's about truth. It's never good to flatter people. That's really a strategy to put you in a better light. It's not really concerned for the best of the other one. There's one final thing I want to say about how we should speak with regard to encouragement, and that is a group that we should be particularly keen to encourage. Let me read you from Proverbs 31. This is the wife of noble character. Those of you who are familiar with Proverbs will know that the last chapter extols the value of a godly woman. And one of the things it says about the godly woman, if I can find the verse. Oh, I do apologize. It's just a couple of verses beforehand. So it's not just godly women who should speak about this. Everyone should. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. For the rights of all who are destitute, speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. As Christian people, it's not optional to speak up for those who have less power. It's a command. It's part of having a virtuous tongue. And particularly if you are in a position of power in your family, in the workplace, in a social setting, you are responsible as a child of God to think deeply, not about, I mean, it is important to think about how you can please your boss and so on, but your primary concern as a Christian should be to defend the interests of those lower down the chain. Please think about that. It is them that you are commanded to speak up for. If you have power, this is the primary reason why God has given it to you, to use it to bless those who have less. So may God make my tongue and yours a fountain of life. May he teach us what it is to stay silent when it would be better to say nothing. May he recreate our hearts by the power of his Spirit so that there's a good well of stuff inside us for us to speak out of. May he teach us how to speak with gentle patience and persistence what is true and good. May he make us brave enough and wise enough to instruct others in the way they should go, and where necessary, correct them. May he use our tongues to encourage others so that the life of godliness would be easier for them. And may he use our tongues to speak up for those who have less power than us. May your tongue be a fountain of life.